Let's face it, not many of us perform our own works. We play music written by the great composers. If it's popular music from the last 50 years, we say we're doing covers. And a lot of the covers people do get to be much more popular than the original.
Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling so lonely.
That's Crazy, being sung by Patsy Cline, and I bet a lot of you think she actually wrote it. But no, it was Willie Nelson.
Crazy, crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy, crazy for feeling so blue.
Patsy Cline's version got way more famous than Willie Nelson's, and there are tons of examples like this. In the world of opera, every generation puts out recordings of arias and operas that are beloved to all of us. What is it about a particular voice that makes someone prefer it over another voice? Welcome back to Accelerando. I'm Paula Tuttle, and this week we're looking at the sounds that trigger us. When we talk about all the components that make up music, there are two categories, analog and digital. And the definitions are a bit different from what we're used to thinking of in those terms, but it's actually the same root. Because analog means continuous. In recording, for example, the analog sound waves are recorded continuously, whereas digital music is samples of waveforms. Tiny pieces cut back together and recreating the sound wave. So most of music is made up of digital pieces. Rhythm is one. It's really just a series of beats or pulses. Sometimes they're really fast, and other times they're repetitive things that seem to hold a piece together. In the same way, pitches are single notes pasted together in a song. Melodies are made up of single separate notes that we recognize because of the order they're written in. Harmony, it's also pieces put together in a puzzle. Let's say you're hearing a theme variations. Harmony holds the music together from one melody to the next. It's the connector. And each chord is separate, but it's part of the puzzle. There's one component of music that is denoted as analog because it's continuous, and it's timbre. Timbre means character, quality, and distinction. How do we differentiate one voice from another? We recognize tone color and tone quality. There are physical characteristics to sound that help us separate voices and instruments from one another. We talk about spectrum, which was first a word for optics, meaning a continuum of light waves. In sound, we do the same. Pitches can change continuously, even though that's not really how we usually write music. There are gaps between the frequencies. After spectrum, we talk about the envelope of a sound. The envelope could be the decay of a piano key. It could also refer to the acoustics in a particular hall. How a sound changes over time is the envelope. The Acoustical Society of America defines timbre as that attribute of auditory sensation that enables the listener to judge that two non-identical sounds presented similarly in loudness and pitch are indeed dissimilar. Some people get really particular about defining timbre. Like F. Schouten in 1968, he wrote, "There were five things that help us differentiate timbres in contemporary music. One is a range between tonal and noise-like. Two is the spectral envelope, meaning the frequencies. We're assuming they're talking about non-tonal music here. Think noise. Three, the time envelope. This includes attack and decay. Four, and this is putting my teeth on edge now, changes of spectral envelope. Think glissandos as an example. And fundamental frequencies. Translation, microtonal music. And finally, if you haven't gone blind quite yet, the prefix or onset of a sound that is quite dissimilar from the ensuing lasting vibration." Okay, why all this mumbo jumbo? Well, the study of psychoacoustics has a lot of meaning. We all have our preferences. Susan Rogers, she's an audio engineer who went back to school to become a psychoacoustician. And in her book, This Is What It Sounds Like, she talks about people putting together a mixtape of pieces they really love, pieces they relate to, the ones that trigger you, that speak to you. I like her theories because, if anything else, she talks like a regular person. She probably can parse all the spectral distinctions, but she started as an engineer for Prince, the rock musician. And her first love is really the music she helped produce and all the concurrent works that surrounded her during those years, especially her own upbringing. Her main thought is that we are all tied to the sounds of our own life. And when people have preferences, there are no wrong answers. Timbre is the one factor in the music we love that makes it what we love. And I think it's great she puts a name to it. The version or the cover you prefer, it's the timbre that gets you. And it's all about the triggers. If you love hard rock, it's also timbre, meaning the combinations of instruments and the heavy rhythm. They create the texture. So timbre can also mean texture, combinations of instruments. In this little excerpt, I bet you can identify all the instruments by their timbre. The kind of sound they make on a clarinet. We know it's a clarinet. When you hear a recording of a Beethoven symphony, you can name the instruments you hear. A bassoon, the cello section, a flute with an oboe. We recognize timbre really well in spite of not seeing the instruments. Timbre could be an electronic instrument like a synthesizer. Or a traditional instrument. It can be digitally produced, but the continuous timbre is analog. People have the ability to recognize one piano from another piano, one violin from another violin. And in general, our hearing is the most granular sense we have. We sense sounds all around. We can pinpoint a location. We can tell how far away it is. Our sense of sound keeps working when we're asleep, but we wake up when a sound alerts us. Also, consider the ability of our ears to overcome hearing loss and damage. The aural nerves are the closest to the brain, meaning it's our oldest sense. This theory that hearing developed to a higher level comes from the supposition that we were once nocturnal and we relied on our hearing more, until we evolved to daylight dwellers, then the eyesight evolved. What's truly amazing about hearing, though, is you can improve it in your lifetime. You learn to follow sounds, whether it be in a symphony orchestra or a crowded room. How well do you hear an individual at a party? Some people can do this better than others. And some of the most sophisticated listeners are air traffic controllers because they have to listen to their plane that they're assigned to track amidst all the other planes. And they tweak their hearing, improving it over time. What about a conductor who needs to hone in on a single instrument out of 100 players? His ears are focusing on the timbre. And can he actually isolate a single player? Maybe, depending on the maestro and how developed his hearing is. I once did an opera with Lauren Mizell, and at first I thought he was pretending he could pick me or another individual out of a group of same instruments. His iconic reaction was to do a visual scan of the group, then he'd turn away. It was terrifying. Later, when I saw him conduct while I was an audience member, I saw him do the same thing. Maybe he heard something he didn't like, and he'd turn away to see with his ears. It was like the Eye of Sauron was upon Frodo when he put on the ring. So the study of acoustics is interesting, especially since everyone's development is linked to their experience. In the study of psychoacoustics, we learn about psychological responses to sounds. You will have a unique reaction to any sound, but there are some commonalities among groups. We all have triggers and memories from the sound of our mother's voice. It's truly our oldest memory because our eyes don't see in our first moments as well as our ears hear. Anyways, this is very likely why some people are drawn to one voice and others to another. The memory triggers an emotion. Maybe it's a feeling of safety or joy. And we develop these same kinds of memories and triggers when we listen to music. We are drawn into what speaks to us based on our experiences and preferences, be it klezmer, clarinet music, popular vocal music, or classical string music. People say the violin is the closest thing to the human voice. Well, the cello is the same, in particular registers. We hear minuscule differences from one player to another, and we have preferences. Just like some of humanity has preferences for hard rock or reggae, there's something primal in all of it. Sure, the rhythm and the harmony have a lot to do with your tastes, but the timbre is the quality that keeps you coming back to a particular performance. Some people love this piece. But Andrea Bocelli makes the crowd wild when he sings it. It's like a mass trigger. Everyone recognizes it, and everyone knows his particular voice or timbre.
Con te partirò, paesi che non ho mai veduto e vissuto con te. questo sì li vivrò con te.
Here's a different example. We all know this one too.
Mare mio mistero è chiuso in me. Il nome mio nessuno saprà. No, no, sulla tua mano.
Nessun Dorma. It's a long time favorite, and this is Pavarotti.
Quando la
But maybe you love the sound of a cello more than a tenor, no matter how great the tenor is. So listen to it on the instrument that makes your heart go pitter-pat. We're all different, and that's good in a way. It makes the world demand more kinds of music. And live music hits our sweet spot every time. That's it for this week. Share this episode or subscribe to this podcast. If you have questions or suggestions, you can email accelerandocast@gmail.com. Bye now.